This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Friday, April 19th. I'm Angela Denning. Petersburg School District is going ahead with some staffing changes, despite not knowing what it will receive in state funding next fiscal year. The administration says it's tired of playing budget games. Here's more on that. There's a little over a month left of school. The Petersburg District and dozens of others around the state have been waiting to hear what their state funding will be so they can plan for the next school year. Petersburg Superintendent Erica Klutpainter told the local school board at their last meeting that the process sometimes feels like they're just a pawn.
We're just kind of tired of feeling like we're in the middle of that kind of political game right now.
School Board President Mara Litomski agreed.
It's really unfortunate, the games that are being played.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has proposed cuts that would equal $1.4 million for Petersburg. It's unknown what the legislature will do, if they'll agree to the governor's budget or offer more money. One thing is certain, though, to school district staff. The waiting is getting old. Klutpainter says it's a real distraction.
It takes us away from our mission, which is really tiresome. It trickles down to kids, especially older kids are very well aware. You know, that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate to have that stress kind of trickling down through teachers, through our aides, you know, and families.
In some ways, the school district has been on pause since January, when Dunleavy started talking about cuts to education. He first announced that he would not pay out $20 million in one-time spending to school districts that the legislature already approved. Then in February, he announced his scaled-back operating budget. Despite the uncertain funding, the Petersburg School District has decided to go ahead with some staffing decisions for next year. Klutpainter says they're hiring a second fourth-grade teacher to accommodate a growing student population at the grade school. They're also replacing a special education teacher who has been hired as the elementary school's principal.
We're moving forward. It's time to move forward. We're not going to be held hostage anymore.
The district also decided on a reduction to one position, the elementary school librarian. Longtime librarian Mary Ellen Anderson is retiring at the end of the school year. Klutpainter says they're looking at having the middle and high school librarian, Carissa Cotta, run the two school libraries with the help of some aides.
It will look different, but we think that it can be as impactful and supportive as we want it to be.
The superintendent says these changes may not last forever, but the district is trying to maintain a conservative outlook. She says it's always easier to add items back to the budget down the road than it is to take them away. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. Petersburg Borough Assembly Wednesday dug into the details of her proposed spending plan for the borough government for the fiscal year that starts in July. Some on the assembly signaled their desire to make spending cuts regardless of decisions on funding by the state government. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Borough staff proposed the draft balanced budget with general fund spending at more than $9.5 million, an increase of just over 1% from the current year. The borough manager calls this spending plan a placeholder that he expects to have to revise once state funding to the municipality is certain. Finance Director Jody Tao voiced some concern that spending is increasing and one of the general fund's main revenue sources is nearing its limit.
Well, it's a concern just because we're so unsure about the state's budget. We're worried about our flexibility. We've had to use more property tax to balance this budget. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, we have a cap of 10 mils, and so we're almost to that cap. So we're going to have to figure out some other ways to balance this budget. You know, usually we use property tax as, you know, the final number to balance, and we won't be able to do that soon.
By charter, the borough can only charge up to 10 mils of property tax, not counting tax for voter-approved projects. 10 mils is the tax rate of $10 on every $1,000 of assessed value for land and buildings. The proposed budget would increase the property tax rate by 0.4 mils. The assembly sets that rate each spring. The property tax rate could also be raised further for Service Area 1 if the state stops debt reimbursement for school projects as proposed by the governor. That money each year is over $469,000. The borough still has around $3.5 million in school project debt outstanding, including interest. Tao explained that Petersburg is in a relatively good place with debt compared to other municipalities.
I point that out, too, but there's a lot of communities that have just issued bonds, you know, that have 20 years left that I have no idea what they're going to do in their communities. So it doesn't seem like we're that lucky, but we are kind of lucky that the end is in sight.
The first of three bond issues for the swimming pool will be paid off in 2021. Other local bond debt will be retired within the next decade. Another big question mark is whether the state will eliminate or reduce payment for raw fish tax revenue to the municipality. That move could force spending cuts in the general fund and would impact Harbor Department reserves for projects. The borough expects costs for health insurance to increase around 14% for the upcoming year and is also budgeting for 1% salary increases for employees. Those were agreed to in labor negotiations. In addition, department heads who are not represented by unions will also see those wage increases. The budget flat funds the school district at $1.8 million. It would cut grants to community service organizations, KFSK, Mountain View Food Service, the Clausen Museum, and the Chamber of Commerce by 10%. To help balance the budget, the borough has removed money for unforeseen expenses. Mayor Mark Jensen highlighted that spending might have to be added back in.
So we don't have any contingency money.
Nope.
And normally we budget $80,000.
Yes.
So, and we generally use half. So
yes.
We can be looking for a $40,000 supplemental if things continue historically.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'd have to come back to the assembly and ask permission and hope that we, you know, our general
fund. That could be another $40,000 added to the budget.
By personnel, the largest departments for the borough are in assisted living with the equivalent of nearly 17 full-time jobs, while the police and jail have a combined 14 positions. Overall, the budget as drafted includes funding for the equivalents of just under 90 jobs, although a number of those are not currently filled. Assemblymember Jeff Mucci wanted to make spending cuts.
I mean, that's what I want to do. I want to reduce the budget.
Come up with a proposal, I guess.
Well, you know, I've talked about privatizing parts of public works, you know, privatizing part of the sanitation department. I mean, how do we get ideas into the budget to reduce the budget? I mean, I'm all for, I don't want a balanced budget. I want a reduced budget. That's what I want personally.
Assembly members can propose changes to any spending at any time during the Assembly's three readings of the budget ordinance. Cuts or additions need approval of a majority of the Assembly or four votes. Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht said staff would look into privatization if the Assembly voted that way.
And again, it's not apples to apples, but we used to use an outside contractor to pick up recycling. And it was a lot more than paying our own people to do it. My guess is snow removal would be pretty similar. Don't know that. I mean, clearly if four members of the Assembly say, hey, go get proposals to do our snow routes, then that's what we're going to do.
Giesbrecht explained that the driving force behind spending in the borough was mainly personnel costs.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's not an idea worth looking into, but it's going to come down to people, and it's also going to come down to services. What is the community going to accept? You know, I suggested, you know, 8 hours from the library schedule and 8 hours from Parks and Rec, and this room was full. And that's, I mean, what do we say that was going to save us $30,000, I think, total?
Some other assembly members did not sound ready to make big spending cuts yet. Here's Jay Stanton Greger and Bob Lynn.
It's too much a moving target, in my humble opinion, from Governor Dunleavy. At this point, we're trying to do our best, and doing so with creating efficiencies or minor reductions in some areas resonates much better with me as opposed to really starting hacking and cutting until, you know, if we need to.
I'm not in for great big cuts. I'd like to maintain the school funding that the way we have it here. I think it's necessary. I think the school is in for some cuts. I just don't see any way around that, watching the politics at the state level. That said, I'm also want to be very cautious. I would not be willing to fill any positions at this time until we see how things occur at the state level.
However, Mucci signaled a desire to fill vacant positions, that police sergeant's job, as well as the emergency medical services coordinator in the fire department, even if that meant cutting elsewhere.
The police department and EMS, they're very important to the community. I don't think it makes any difference at all what the governor says to us. I mean, if there's cuts to the school, then we'll sort that out and we'll pay for that. But, I mean, I don't think it's up to the state government to tell us locally what's important.
The budget has limited spending for capital projects, mainly for water, sewer, and electrical infrastructure. The first reading of an ordinance on the budget is May 6th, and the budget proposal can be found on the borough's website. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Two of the nation's 10 most endangered rivers are right here in southeast Alaska. That's according to American Rivers, a conservation group opposed to mining and energy development in wilderness areas. KHNS's Claire Strempel has more from Haines.
You look around the village here, and we're on the banks of the Chilkat River. You'll see, just in eye shot here, there's two smokehouses to my right, three smokehouses to my left.
Kimberly Strong is standing on a bank of the Chilkat River in front of her home.
This is really a big part of our livelihood as traditional food gathering. And the salmon that runs in the river, the Chilkat Heaney, has been part of our lives for thousands of years.
She's the president of the Chilkat Indian Village of Klukwan. It sits on the Chilkat River, recently named the sixth most endangered river in the nation. It is one of the longest continually inhabited places in North America. The name means eternal city, and the Tlingit have lived on this river for thousands of years, feeding off of rich salmon runs. But Strong says mining upstream could pose an existential threat to all that.
This is a food sovereignty issue. It's having access to the natural resources that are around us.
Strong says in Klukwan, the Chilkat is more than a river. It's the history of a people and their food source. That's why she's fighting for the resource. American Rivers is a Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group that has been releasing the Most Endangered Rivers report for over three decades. Communications Director Amy Kober says the purpose of their annual Endangered Rivers list is to raise national awareness about threatened rivers.
It's powerful because it's a call to action. This report showcases 10 rivers facing urgent threats. So these rivers aren't the worst rivers in the country or the most polluted rivers in the country, but they're rivers really at a crossroads.
She says people have taken action on behalf of rivers they've highlighted in the past. The Chilkat River is one of two Southeast Alaska rivers listed in the 2019 report. The Stikine River, which flows out of British Columbia and empties near Wrangell, is 10th. They're both on for the same reason, mining development. In Klukwan, I'm Claire Strempel. The Ketchikan School Board on Wednesday approved a first reading of the district's fiscal year 20 draft budget, reflecting a reduction from the status quo of about 3%. A status quo spending plan would cost about $41.6 million. The draft budget calls for spending about $40.4 million. The bulk of Ketchikan District's revenue comes from the state, and that funding is nearly impossible to predict at this point. The governor has proposed a significant cut to education, a move that many legislators oppose. The state budget fight likely will continue past the district's May 1st deadline to submit its own budget to the borough for approval. Ketchikan Borough funding for schools is the next largest revenue source. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly indicated to the school board earlier this year that it would fund schools at about $5.7 million above the required local contribution. That required minimum level of local school funding is $4.8 million, but that too isn't set in stone.
But again, that's what makes our job very difficult, because we're now having to guess two things: how much will our state contribute to our budget, and how much will the borough? I feel more confident in our borough contribution than the state.
That's the Ketchikan School Board President Matt Eisenhower. Other board members expressed frustration with the process. Here's Bridget Mattson.
To design a budget based on not having any idea what you're working with is insane, both from the borough and from the state. And I think that legally, I mean, I'm hoping that maybe this sheds some light and they can change, because this is, it's untenable and it's not fair and it's not right. It's not right in our borough, and it's certainly not right in our state. It's not right to play with people's lives like this.
While the board didn't amend the proposed draft budget, members did talk about whether a 3% cut was enough. Eisenhower says the question is, if they guess wrong, what's easier to fix?
If we guess wrong and our budget is dramatically slashed, that means some really, really hard decisions, as you pointed out, in July and August, very quick, you know, month to 2 months away from school starting. If we guess wrong the other way, the fix seems to me less painful of hiring back teachers.
Mattson leaned toward amending the budget with a larger spending reduction. Board member Rachel Breithaupt thought, though, says she prefers to move forward with the proposed draft budget and then fight for it.
God, I just feel like belligerent to not dance with crazy. I'm just feeling really belligerent about it.
She says sometimes she has to go with her gut, and it's telling her to not cut more from local education. In the end, the Ketchikan School Board voted 5-1 to introduce the draft budget without any amendments. Mattson was the only no vote. The draft budget cuts about $560,000 from teacher salaries. Finance Director Katie Perot told the board much of that is from teacher retirements and some job shifting. Other positions in instructional support and support staff are currently vacant, and they'll remain that way. Some districts' costs went up, mostly due to recent negotiated agreements with district bargaining groups. The draft fiscal year 2020 Ketchikan School District budget will be coming back to their school board during their regular meeting April 24th. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.